This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Justice Malala to make his triumphant entrance on the show this morning because, as we've said from the beginning, there's nobody who can put things into perspective like Justice can. We were very excited yesterday at a quick prelude to the State of the Nation address. Justice, did you eventually end up making it to the Sona last night?
I didn't. When we spoke, I was in the Free State, but there was a bit of a, how shall I say, a bit of a problem with my flight. So I ended up back in Joburg. So I watched it on television, and I read, and I read, and I had fun, like most people, watching our democracy in action. It was quite a spectacle, shall we say. I particularly enjoyed that point when the speaker and the chair, the speaker of the National Assembly and the chair of the NCOP, one of the EFF guys kept on saying, "Madam Speaker, Madam Speaker,
yeah,
Madam Speaker," and they were just ignoring him. And I must have gone on for 5 minutes of just Madam Speaker. It's one of those things, you know, that club DJs do at the back. Like,
yeah. But you know, the funny thing is that the president kept going, despite the fact that he was talking about some pretty... He drew on the ghosts of Nelson Mandela, Hector Peterson. He pulled out every stop he could to try and drive an emotive message home in that opening, but it was all drowned out by the noise.
No, it was. Look, he had a lot of history there. You know, he could quote that this was the 40th anniversary of this and, you know, 26 years after Mandela walked out of jail. It was all there, and he tried to use it all. But, you know, sometimes you just have to acknowledge that history is not on your side, that you have, you're dealing with a bunch of people who know how to use the moment and use it to their advantage. So, you know, Julius Malema and the EFF, you could see it was very well coordinated. They knew the rule book. They knew what the difference between a point of order and a recognize me is. They just went for it. And for that first hour until 8:01 when they walked out of the chamber, it belonged to them. And I have to say, the way Baleka Mbete handled the whole thing, to the extent that she had to be reprimanded by the by Naledi Pandor, who said, "Stop talking to these people and just let's get on with the job."
Yeah,
it was quite a thing.
Wow, it's embarrassing for her, and even Thandi Modise tried to save her once or twice and stepped in eventually. Yeah. And Baleka sat there, and you could see she was about 5 seconds away from a heart attack.
I thought she was going to throw a shoe at someone at that point.
Yeah.
It didn't look good in there. No. But you know, she knew what was coming. I was surprised that she indulged in the toing and froing, which sort of became more and more of a farce the longer we went into the evening. I don't know why she didn't have a plan. I don't know why she didn't say, you know, right at the beginning, well, if this is going to be the way it goes on, let's go on. Because what she did was expose herself by allowing, say, Musi Maimane to stand up and say, there are 8.7 million people waiting
without
to
jobs.
Hear.
Yeah. Oh.
And so she allowed the ANC and the DA to speak, but when it was the EFF, which wanted to speak all the time.
Yeah.
It was sort of, I'm not recognizing you.
Now, what about Mosiwa Lekota? I mean, I thought he made a very interesting play there because he stood up. He basically was saying what the EFF wanted to say, but he did it in one succinct point and then left. I mean, very dignified. And for the first time in a long time, something that Lekota could be proud of.
I thought he was magnificent because he made the point. The point that all that was about, that, you know, you, sir, in front of us, have no right. You've violated your oath of office. And so we shouldn't be listening to you. And he went out. I must say, it's been 7 years now since COPE was founded. And after they are fighting and they are stabbing each other in the back with Mbazi Mashilowa and all the stuff that's gone down, it was a proud moment for Cope. I thought he did very well for himself. He was composed. And there is one point he wanted to make, and it was, you, sir, in front of the Constitutional Court, your legal counsel basically said, yes, he broke his oath of office to uphold this constitution. It's not as the court will put it, I'm sure, when it rules, but it's he ground it down to the essentials. And that was the essentials. So Musiwa did well for himself, I thought.
Do you know, my overwhelming...
And he left, and the point was well made.
My overwhelming feeling about the whole first hour of last night's State of the Nation address was just that this is a president who's feeling the power slip away from him every second. You know, he would never have been interrupted 3 years ago. 2 years ago, there might have been some heckling. 1 year ago, there was that disgusting debacle of the EFF being manhandled out of the chamber. And this year, you have a man who can't even begin his speech and maintain a sense of authority or of strength or of the kind of, I suppose you could call it the kind of leadership that we might have seen before. He's just lost his control.
He absolutely has. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to look at everything that's happening and say, you know, people say respect the office of the president and so forth, but what we have here is that classic case of the emperor's naked. If you think about what happened over the past 2-3 months, where you've had in the Constitutional Court his lawyers capitulating, the lawyers for all the people who protected him from Baleka Mbete to Nathi Nhleko capitulating on the issue of Nkandla. When you've had the massive, massive scandal of Nhlanhla Nene sacking, President Zuma, you know, there's a thing when the EFF stood up and started chanting, "Zuptha must fall, Zuptha must fall," and everyone sat there looking. But but that's the elephant in the room, that President Zuma's relationships, President Zuma's conduct during his term in office, and now is bringing back the old things when before he was president, that he's a man who many, many citizens of this country sit there and say, I don't like what I'm seeing here. I might love the African National Congress, but man, I'm sad that it's led by this man. And so, yeah, he's a dead man walking, but not as dead as all that. The point is, we have 2 years to go to the ANC conference. And in my view, he's going to stumble on and limp along to that conference in December 2017. I think if there's a recall in that might be in play, it would be after that conference, when power inside the party has moved to someone else. But for now, I think the embarrassment, I think the scandals will continue to be all over President Zuma. And pretty much what the populace thinks won't matter until what the ANC's leaders in the NEC and conference delegates in December next year think. That's when some action might be taken. But you know, there's no doubt that many, many South Africans watched what happened yesterday, once again saying, What have we done?
Yeah.
And it's a big problem.
Well, Justice, we'll talk to you again on Thursday next week, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, guys. Can I just say one thing for me about the speech?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because there was actually a speech.
There was a speech, and he did get to it.
Yeah.
You know, just one thing for me that stood out that was extraordinary was that firstly, it sounded like two speeches. The first half of the speech, if you listened to what he said, it was almost as if on Tuesday President Zuma went into that meeting he had with the lunch he had with the 100 CEOs.
Yeah.
It seems as if he went in there with a notebook and wrote down everything they said. And the first half of that speech, after he started off on the racism issue, then he got into what we need to do for this turnaround plan, bring certainty to the market and all that and so forth. So it felt like he was reading off their script, and you felt, wow, President Zuma has really been talking to business. And then after that, he came in with sort of the usual stuff that he goes on about and, oh, back to basics and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting for me that he seemed to really have listened to what business had to say. So he used one of the words that they used in their press, in their release afterwards, that story about, oh, a cohesive narrative between business and labor and government, speaking with one voice, projecting. So he seems to be on board with business and organized business about the fact that we might have another credit rating agency downgrade. And so he's got to absolutely do something drastic about it. I was amazed by the influence that I saw of that meeting on the State of the Nation speech. So actually, it looks like he rewrote it. With that meeting in mind over the past day and a half or 2 days. But I sat there thinking, wow, President Zuma, you're listening to business. And it seems as if that emanates from the fact that in December, when he was in trouble, it was business who went to him and said, change this minister that you have. So he seems to be listening. And so it will be interesting to see in on February 24, what Pravin Gordhan builds onto that. So that was one really big interesting thing for me. The stuff he said on the SOEs was quite interesting, I thought, because he said we're going to make, you know, efficiency the watchword in state-owned enterprises. We're going to put in talented, competent people into all of them. He said some of these state-owned companies work, but some don't. But he never once mentioned the one that people are talking about, and that's South African Airways. The one SOE where he's been accused of
directly trying to affect things, yeah.
Sorry?
Of directly trying to implement his own will.
Exactly. So once again, I had a sense of a President Zuma who was saying all the right things, but not seemingly agreeing to do the right things, and it was quite a bit of a schizophrenic state of the nation, that he was saying some good things in there. I mean, one stop shop for investment, where, you know, people would say, why isn't investment coming in? Because it's difficult for the investor to come in with their money and put it into South Africa. There were nice things in there, but there was no detail to some of them, and there were sort of incomplete thoughts. But I was interested that he seemed to be listening. And the key question is whether he was just sugarcoating his speech and this stuff will be forgotten afterwards, or it was a genuine attempt to say, we face recession, we face downgrades, we are in trouble, or whether he was just sort of clutching at straws. But I thought in terms of content, there were some interesting things in there. And he seems to be fighting a lot with his cabinet, because he says we want that 9,600 megawatt of nuclear energy.
Yeah.
But we will be cautious about how we spend. Pravin Gordhan doesn't seem to think we need 9,600 megawatt. So where's that money going to come from? It would be nice to get some detail. But he seemed pretty adamant that nuclear is coming.
All right. Well, let's hold thumbs that that something takes control in terms of logic and reason and sense there. Because what we can't afford, we must not have.
No. He made the point. But once again, he started off by saying we want to have it in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
But we'll look at, you know, how much it costs and how quickly we do it. So, you know, Kusile Power Station and Midupi are still being built. The overruns have been massive. I'm not sure how we're going to do this nuclear thing so quickly and have it giving us electricity in 10 years. But we'll see. It was interesting.
Justice, thanks for checking in with us this morning. Have a great weekend. And this was brought to you as all the different episodes and opportunities we get to hear from Justice are by Nando's. The Burning Platform returns on Thursday next week with a full menu of things that we could talk about.
This is CliffCentral.com.